coming to you from deep inside the bowels of a great big empty. Get ready for another episode of The Home Defense Show with Skip Coriel.
Hello, American families. Welcome to this week's episode of The Home Defense Show. I'm your host, Skip Coriel. And if you love your family, care about them deeply, and want to learn how to protect them in every facet of your life, then you've come to the right place. We got a great show for you today, and I know that you're going to love it. Boy, today we are having back John Correa from Active Self-Protection. I recently took a class with him and went to one of his seminars. John was just awesome, and I wanted to have him on the show to talk about his range training, which is every bit as good as his active self-protection videos and also the seminar that he's running. So we'll be talking with John Correa in segments 2 and 3. Now, what have I been up to? I have been in search and destroy mode. You know, I'm out in the woods almost every day for the past week because you know it's morel mushroom hunting season. And I'm out there in the woods and I'm scanning the ground and I'm starting to feel like Arnold Schwarzenegger, one of those Terminators. You know, they go in search mode and they're scanning the ground. I feel like I have like infrared and I can see that the mushrooms are cooler than the surrounding soil. And it's starting to worry me. What is happening to me? But I was out last night and I'm walking through the woods, and it took me maybe 5 minutes to find the first mushroom. And it was a Morchella hybrida. If you don't know what that is, hey, just look it up on Wikipedia or something, and you'll be able to figure it out. It's one of the 5 species of morel mushroom. Boy, I was out there for, about 3 hours. And there were so many mushrooms out there. After 2 hours, I said, you know what? I've got 2 bags of mushrooms here, and I can't hunt anymore. My back is killing me. You know, it's something strange. When you walk up and down hills, hunched over, so you can get closer to the ground, scanning the ground, number one, you always get lost. Because the woods pretty much looks the same everywhere you go. And when you don't look up and you try and walk in a straight line, it never happens. It never, ever happens. And my back was getting so sore that by the time I get ready to leave 2 hours later, you know, I'm saying, okay, I got to get out of the woods now. You know, Sarah wants me home and I'm just in a lot of pain. So I walk out of the woods, but I can't get out of the woods because there's so many mushrooms. And have you ever tried to walk past a morel mushroom without picking it? It's really hard. It's very difficult. So I'm stopping. I'm picking them all. Finally, you know, I made it out of the woods, you know, 3 hours. And I picked 3 bags of morel mushrooms. But I lost 1 bag. That has never happened to me before. Somewhere out in Yankee Springs, game area, is a bag of morel mushrooms hanging off a limb on a tree about 5 feet up off the ground. I've done that before. You know, when I find a patch of morels, I'll hang a bag, usually an empty bag, in a tree so that I can go around and around and around in concentric circles, departing out away from that bag so that I get all the mushrooms. Well, I had so many mushrooms that I didn't have an empty bag, so I put up a half a bag of morels on the tree, and boy, one morel led to another, and I'm getting farther and farther away, and it was nonstop mushroom picking. And finally, I look around and, oh, where is that bag of mushroom? Then it was a white bag, too. I couldn't find it. I searched for that bag of mushrooms for about 20 minutes, and I never found it. I'm going to go out there again today and pick some more mushrooms, because now, I mean, we are eating mushrooms every single day now. And they are so good. They taste so good. Now I've got one of those food savers, you know, the vacuum sealers. And every day I'm sealing them up, putting them in the freezer, getting them ready for winter time. Because, oh man, the only thing better than fresh morel mushrooms in the spring is fresh morel mushrooms in the winter, which of course is impossible to get, but at least we can have them frozen. But I've stumbled onto a recipe, and some of you will say, well, I've known that recipe for years. Well, I didn't, so shut up. I wanted to cook them in a way that would be more filling, because if you want to fill up on mushrooms, you've got to eat about 100 of them. And I've got this big cast iron wok, and I'll put some olive oil in the bottom and half a stick of butter, not margarine, but the real hard stuff, real butter. And I'll get that melting, and then I'll chop up a whole onion, and then I'll chop up about 7-8 cloves of garlic. Oh man, I'm a garlic lover. I love garlic. And then I'll get that frying up in there, and sometimes I'll add some thin strips of carrot for color. The other day I added some chopped up kale, and that was pretty good too. And then a pound and a half of either venison or ground beef. And you get that cooking up in there, and then you heap on, you finish filling up the wok with morel mushrooms. And boy, you fry that up for about an hour and just let it simmer. And you know, it's the most amazing thing. Everything in that pot tastes like morel mushrooms. The beef, the venison, the carrots, the onions, everything. And oh man, oh, salt. Don't forget a little bit of salt in there, salt to taste. But oh man, the kids love them. I love them. My wife loves them. And we're like eating this stuff every single day, and I'm not getting tired of it. So when I'm done with the show here, I'm heading back out into the woods, and primarily I'm finding black morels, Morchella angusticeps is the scientific name for that, and then Morchella hybrida, and there's still a few Verpa bohemicas. Technically that's a false morel, but I eat them anyways, and they taste fine to me. So I'll be out again. I hope to start finding some white morels soon, because those are choice. Morchella esculenta, they even sound delicious. So I'll be doing that today after the show. So I got that to look forward to, and then tomorrow I'm training. I've got a basic concealed carry class right here in Hastings, Michigan. We got about 30 people signed up for that. It should be fantastic. But hey, enough of me. Let's talk about what's in the news. BearingArms.com. George Zimmerman arrested for stalking private investigator. You guys remember George Zimmerman, don't you? He was all the rage about 5-6 years ago. Perhaps no single event has had more bearing on stand your ground laws than the death of Trayvon Martin, portrayed by the media as a sweet, innocent kid who was brutally attacked for no reason by a racist George Zimmerman. Martin's death launched the whole Black Lives Matter movement. Zimmerman was arrested and put through hell only for the jury to see the truth. Trayvon Martin assaulted Zimmerman, smashing his head into the concrete sidewalk until Zimmerman fired his weapon. For many of us, however, Zimmerman may have been justified in shooting, but he's never been a good example of self-defense. For example, he was instructed by the 911 operator to remain in his vehicle, which was sound advice. Instead, he decided to follow Martin, which led to the assault. Still, Zimmerman was defending himself, even if he didn't make the best decisions leading up to that moment. Now, Zimmerman's seeming lack of impulse control has landed him in some hot water that he may not be able to get out of. This time, he's been accused of stalking. Oh, look at this. He has, He has sent 55 calls, 67 text messages, 36 voicemails, and 27 emails in just 9 days. Gosh. He has sent them to a private investigator by the name of Dennis Albert Warren in Seminole County, Florida. Apparently, Zimmerman was, this Warren fella was contacting George Zimmerman to see if he would be interviewed in a Jay-Z TV documentary about Trayvon Martin's death called Rest in Power, The Trayvon Martin Story. Zimmerman became incensed, apparently because Warren had visited Zimmerman's uncle in his home. Quote, he's well on his way to the inside of a gator. Oh, that's not good. Zimmerman texted to one of the film's producers in reference to Warren, according to the sheriff's report. So he threatened to kill someone and feed them to the gators. Well, I guess they do that in Florida. The harassment escalated over a series of vulgar messages in December, according to the complaint. In one message, Zimmerman sent Warren a story from TheBlast.com that quoted Zimmerman saying, I know how to handle people who F with me. I have since February of 2012. That's the month he shot and killed Martin, an unarmed black teenager. Zimmerman also sent Warren messages, including, I'll show up at your home, you effing, oh my gosh. Anyone who Fs with my parents will be fed to an alligator. Boy, he likes alligators. You know, the inside story that I had from like back in 2012 when all this happened, that Zimmerman really was a nice guy, kind of mild-mannered kind of guy. I don't think he's that way anymore. I think George Zimmerman may have changed here. I know his life's been hell for the last 5-6 years. But, you know, you go through adversity, you get better or you get worse. I will reserve judgment. And I certainly will not harass George Zimmerman. I don't want to be fed to an alligator. Alligators make me nervous. Okay. I wouldn't mind eating alligator, but I don't want to be eaten by an alligator. Huge difference there. Okay, folks. Well, I think that's about all the time we have on this segment of the Home Defense Show. We're going to take a 2-minute break here. When we come back, we'll be speaking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. And we'll be talking about his Survive the Fight tour. It sounds like he's a rock star now, but no, he's not a rock star. He's just a firearms trainer. While we're away, go ahead and check out our sponsors, EliteFirearms.us. Talk to Larry Jackson about getting a personal defense gun for your family. And then also go to FirearmsLegal.com/MidwestTactical and protect your family from the criminal justice system should you have to use a firearm in self-defense. Okay, when we come back, it'll be John Correa from Active Self-Protection. It's going to be good, folks. Okay, this is Skip Coriel on Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
My name is Siege Coriel. Welcome to the Home Defense Show with my dad, Skip Coriel. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit EliteFirearms.us.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. We are speaking today with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. John, welcome to the Home Defense Show.
Skip, thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, I'm sure it is. But thank you for saying that anyways. John, you know, it is, it's so much different when you're talking to someone on the phone or you're emailing or you're texting or whatever. It's like that's one level of relationship. But we have taken our friendship to the next level. We're no longer just virtual because I got to actually meet you and talk with you and train with you when you were here in Battle Creek, Michigan a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it was great to have you on the range, Skip. Obviously, clearly, I think that your skill set was maybe a little beyond the curriculum of the class, but it's always great to get out on the range with friends and meet people in real life, too, because that's when you really get to know folks.
Oh, yeah. It just takes it to the next level. But, you know, there's a little bit of a backstory on the range time with you, because I wanted to train with you on the range so much. Because, you know, I've been watching your videos for, I don't know, a couple of years now. And I wanted to know, okay, is this guy as good on the range as he is on the computer? And, of course, obviously you were. But, John, the backstory is I had to go out on the range with a holster that I had never used before. And because, you know, I know how you feel about Serpa holsters, and that's that's what I carry, and so I had to order a new holster, like 3 weeks.
I'm glad that you did, and I hope you continue to use it.
Well, actually, I am continuing to use it because it worked out pretty good. I was surprised it's more comfortable, you know, but I had to learn how to draw from that holster, and it really slowed me down. And I was disappointed with my performance, but hey, you know, what are you going to do, right? You're, you know, the one time I'm perfect, I hope it's in a gunfight, but then again, I hope I never have a gunfight.
Yeah, no kidding.
But anyways.
Well, and, you know, we always set standards for ourselves, but then, I mean, of course, just so everybody else understands, you were well within the standards of the class. You were well ahead of most students in the class. So you were doing great, but I get your own personal standards and that you go, look, I didn't meet my own standards. I understand that a lot.
Yeah. Well, John, the name of your tour, your training tour, is called Survive the Fight Tour. Why don't you tell us about Survive the Fight?
Well, it kind of came from this idea of, I've taught classes in Phoenix. I mean, the business started as a handgun instruction business. So, you know, YouTube came later, and now, of course, I'm known for the YouTube videos and those kind of things. But at my core, I'm a self-defensive firearms instructor, empty-handed skills and firearms. So when we really saw last year that people, when they saw what was going on in real, honest-to-goodness defensive encounters, gunfights and armed robberies, then they go, man, so what does this mean for my range training? We decided to really sit down and say, okay, what are the lessons that we really think are most important? And what are the things that you really have to do most often in order to survive the fight? And that's where the name came from. You know, I mean, we just decided, what does it take to survive the fight every time? And what we found was when we do the seminar, the classroom portion, really there are about, you know, I could draw out 50 lessons if I wanted to, but around 20 that are incredibly common, and so common that you really got to think about them. And then we applied that to adult learning and said, okay, so the Pareto principle, or the 20-80 rule, says that you will get 80% of your outcomes from 20% of your inputs. So we really sat down to say, what do we see in real life defensive encounters? What are the things that make for survival? And what are the things that make for the successful outcomes? And that 20% of skills that give you an 80% chance of surviving, once you've really nailed those, then you can move on to the other skills. You know, you shouldn't be working on double akimbo barrel rolls until such time as you can do those things that actually win fights 100%. So once we established it, we said, well, let's make a range day that says, here's the things you got to have. And they're not the things that are going to make for Instagram fame on the range, but they will win gunfights. And so from concealment for CCW holders. So I'm not talking about operators kicking doors in Afghanistan. I'm not talking about cops chasing goblins down holes. I'm talking about people dealing with muggers and armed robbers and carjackers.
Yeah.
And so that's how we designed the curriculum. My background is 9 years of college education and grad school education. I taught undergrads and graduates, so curriculum design, knowledge transfer, assessment, those kind of things are my bailiwick. So that's how we built the course. Built it for a 1 day on the range because I realized that as we traveled, that most students aren't going to train with me again regularly. So at least they know when they go home, here are the range drills, and here are the dry fire drills, and here are the skills that you have to master first before you start going to tactical fantasy band camp and just taking classes for fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, John, that's one of the things that I took away from your class, your range time. You know, because when I try and take a couple of national level trainers every single year so that I can keep honing my skills, just get in practice and learn more stuff. And boy, you know, you talked about three skills that you have to have in order to make it through a gunfight. Talk about those three skills that we have to have.
Well, I mean, of course, every single person in if it's a gunfight by definition, then 100% of the time you're going to have a gun in your hand, okay? Mm-hmm. And so drawing that gun from concealment quickly and reliably is a 100% skill. Now, we also work just a little bit on what we call a surreptitious draw or a hidden or covert draw, but we didn't work on that a lot. So that draw from concealment, 100% of the time, you're going to have to do that. And so having that quick, reliable, accurate draw to presentation is incredibly important. You know, there's really, I don't think anything else that if you can't get the gun out in the fight, well, then you lose.
Right.
The second skill is, of course, in that draw, putting the first shot on target quickly and accurately. So there's always a balance of speed and accuracy, but we want to work to the standard. You know, the national standard for concealed carriers is a 2-second draw to first shot. And that's not, when we got on the line in Battle Creek, when we started on Saturday morning, only one of 31 students hit that time in the morning. But it's not rocket science. It's just good mechanics. And so by the end of the day, we had 29 students at the end of the day on the line. A couple students had to go early for, you know, various reasons. And 28 out of 29 were able to hit that standard on the post test. And so getting that first shot accurately and on target, and then getting multiple shots, almost always in handgun gunfights, get the ability to put a second and a third shot where you want it on time, incredibly important. And then the last thing that I see, everybody in real gunfights moves after the gun comes out. Mm-hmm. So whether they move beforehand is, you know, some yes, some no. But once the shots are done, nobody then stands there in the range, does the range haka look and scan and assess, and puts the gun away. Now, I get we have to do that on the range because of the safety factor. But, you know, in the class, we also work on with blue guns. I don't do it with live guns. Understanding how to move with a gun in your hand in such a way that you do so safely and effectively. So that takes up a whole day.
Yeah, pretty much it did. So the three skill sets that you're going to need in the gunfight 100% of the time are drawing, shooting, and moving. You know, I think I always knew that, and I've always taught that, but I'd never had it taught systematically like that, and just have it broken down very simply like that. And, you know, the day after I was on the range with you, I had a level one Beyond Basic CPL class. That's like the class that you take after your 8-hour concealed carry course. And that's how I approached it. You know, we spent the first part of the day drawing, and then I taught them accuracy, how to shoot, and then towards the end, we incorporated some movement into the drills, and boy, it just worked really, really well. Now, John, there was the analysis, you tested us at the beginning, and talk about that baseline test. Remind me, what is it that you tested us on?
Well, so here's my thing. Again, as somebody who taught undergrads for 9 years, assessment is vital. Knowledge transfer is king, and I've asked so many instructors, how do you know that your students have learned something or grown in their skills? And for the most part, they say, well, they can do the drill that I asked them to do, or they can pass the qualification at the end. And I said, well, that's great, but how do you know what their skill set was at the beginning, whether you actually taught them anything? You don't know if they could have passed that before you ever taught them anything, and then they just were out on the range having fun for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't have a pre-course assessment for students, now, again, if you're in a regular place, I have a friend who has a Tuesday night league for his at his range, and they continuously assess their students, and I think that's great. And I think every shooter should assess themselves, you know, and keep a log of how they're doing on various tests. But I don't know that coming in as an instructor. You know, we had 31 students on the line total and you know, two flights and all that. And to say, okay, so where are you at right now? Now, we taught safe holstering and unholstering of the gun before these, because, of course, you want to make sure that students are safe, and people do all kinds of crazy things trying to holster a gun. And then we did three tests. We did the first half of the dot torture test, the first five dots of dot torture, in the morning. And that test is simply for me to look at students as they're doing that test and make sure that they can do the basics of sight picture and sight alignment and trigger control under no time pressure. I don't do dots 6 through 10 in large classes, number one, because they take a lot of time. Number two, because they work on skills that I don't expect them to have coming in. Mm-hmm. But the first five dots are draw the gun and put it, you know, safely, easily, accurately, put a shot on target, and then put the gun away.
Yeah.
Or draw the gun, put a shot on target, move to a second target, put a shot on target. Dot five is strong hand only. Sometimes see that happen. So that was just for that. Then the second drill that we did is we did Gila Hayes 5x5 drill, which is 5 yards. You put a 5-inch circle, and from low ready, you on the beep, you have 5 seconds to put 5 shots in a 5-inch circle at 5 yards. And what that drill tests is recoil management and trigger control. So it says, can you put follow-up shots where you want them at a reasonably slow pace, not a crazy fast pace? And then we did the draw to first shot, because that is the singular standard of what a concealed carrier may very well have to do, is quickly draw a firearm, get it correctly oriented, and press one shot into you know, an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. We gave a pretty generous target that's a little bigger than the vital zones, but it gives everyone a good size target that's not crazy big to hit for. And then we recorded their score on the dot torture. We recorded the number of hits on the 5x5 in the 5 seconds. And then we record the times. We did 2 iterations for each student of the draw to first shot, and then averaged those for their time. And that gave us a baseline of where they were, each one individually, when the day started.
And, John, I think it worked really well. I mean, setting the baseline, and then at the end of the day, you know, we did it again, and you could see your improvement. And, boy, I think almost everyone in the class improved, some dramatically.
Well, they really did. And I think that that's really important as we look. One of the things that I really like is, number one, that sent every student home with an objective measure. They had a sheet of paper in their hands that says, here's where I was at the beginning of the day, here's where I am at the end of the day. That also lets us track, here's the gun I was shooting and those kind of things.
Yeah.
And every single one, we wrote them down as well, showed statistical improvement. That's something that's very important to me. Did my teaching methodology statistically and demonstrably help students? Did I give them something needed? So it did, and for every student, they were able to see objective evidence of improvement at the end of the day. And even though at the end of the day, we shot almost 300 rounds, and for most students who are not training junkies, you know, mm-hmm. 300 rounds for a pistol in a day is a lot. And so their hands are tired, and their arms are tired, and they've been outside all day, so they're a little windblown. So they're not at their best in the late afternoon, and even with that variable, all of them improved significantly. So that's a good thing. And then hopefully we send them home with a couple things to say, okay, if you're going to consolidate these gains, here's what you need to do at 3 days. Here's what you need to do at 3 weeks, at 3 months, to really think about these skills and keep them working so that you keep them in your repertoire.
Yeah. John, we're out of time here for this first segment, but when we come back, I want to talk about a lot more stuff. There's just so much more to talk about here. But folks, we got a 2-minute break here. While we're away, go ahead and check out elitefirearms.us and also check out firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical. We will be back in 2 minutes speaking again with John Correa from Active Self Protection. This is Skip Coriel and Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Phoenix Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Always use guns safely and wisely. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if life was like the movies and the good guys always won? In today's world, if you're forced to use your firearm to protect yourself, you will need protection. Firearms Legal Protection is here for you. FLP provides you with seasoned, experienced attorneys that handle your criminal and civil matters as a result of you protecting yourself. FirearmsLegal.com provides its members with uncapped attorney's fees, bail bond protection, and coverage in all 50 states. We are not a reimbursement plan. You can access uncapped attorney's fees for as low as $10 a month. Firearms Legal members are provided with educational services, training videos, and access to our vast national attorney network. While you're protecting yourself, let Firearms Legal protect you.
Listen up, folks. This is important. There are plenty of legal protection services out there, but none will protect you as well as Firearms Legal Protection. This is the one I use and the only one I recommend. Visit firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical and protect your family now. Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is Skip Coriel. We're speaking with John Correa of Active Self-Protection, all about his Survive the Fight tour. Now, John, you've got another training day coming up in your Survive the Fight tour here pretty soon. Tell us about that.
Yeah, sure do. We have basically just outside of Minneapolis in Anoka, Minnesota. We have coming up next weekend, in fact. And that one we jokingly internally in-house called the Deluxe Edition, because on Thursday night and Friday morning, we do some things for church security. Many people know that I was a pastor for 14 and a half years until very recently. I haven't left the faith at all, just decided to focus on the business instead of pastoral work. So we do particularly security and thoughtful security measures for churches under 200. Do that, and then the same thing, a seminar on Friday night open to the public so that you can see the realities of deadly force encounters, and then a live fire class on Saturday to work on those skills. And you know, the great part, but the hard part that I have to tell you, Skip, is that we try to make them better every single time. So hopefully the things that we learned on the range together in Battle Creek means that the people of Anoka will actually get a better class than you got. So I apologize to you for that, but hopefully they get better.
Well, so I'm going to have to show up in Minnesota now, right? Well, you know, John, I can't slight you for that. I do the same thing. I mean, certainly the advanced class that I teach today is not the advanced class that I taught 10 years ago, and that's the way it should be. I mean, we're not perfect. I mean, we're always learning new stuff and things that used to be considered state of the art by the gun industry, the gun training industry, is not the state of the art now, because we learn things like from these videos that you're talking about.
Well, and I really value, Skip, that you said you try to get one or two classes every year. You know, Carl Wren did a great study in Texas, and he found that only 1% of Texas firearms owners every year took a class above and beyond their CCW class. And I tell students all the time, if you show up to one class a year, you're in the top 1% of firearms owners in your state. And so as an instructor, I love hearing instructors saying, hey, I still take classes. I still sit under instruction because I want to learn not only that my skills are sharp and that I'm getting better. However, I also need to learn as an instructor and learn what other teachers are doing and hear why they are teaching the way that they are. So I'm a training junkie myself, and so I really value that you're doing that.
So, John, while I listen to you talk, either, you know, over the phone or on the range or in the seminar, you'll be mentioning certain people. Now, what I'd like to know is, who are your influences, your early influences, the trainers that you respect now? Who do you try to train with?
Well, I do train currently every week with my teacher, Lawrence Robinson, at Attitude First Martial Arts Academy here in Phoenix, Arizona. I've been training empty-handed skills with Lawrence for 12 years now. In fact, this month, Lawrence is the one who instilled in me a mindset of self-protection and the art of peace. And so I greatly value Lawrence. And his teacher, Skip Hancock, and another business mentor and friend and incredible martial artist, Joe Levinson there, and others in that vein as well. In terms of handgun or in terms of pistol skills, my senpai, in the martial arts world, you call them, if it's a Japanese art, your teacher, big brother, or is a senpai, or in Chinese, they call it a shipak, is Mike Abramovich. He was my NRA training counselor when I first got started in teaching handgun, gave me my first NRA cert. In fact, every NRA cert I have came under Mike's tutelage. And his respect for students and his way of transferring knowledge and his approach to the range, where he doesn't bark and he doesn't get the knife hand out, has been hugely influential on me. Mm-hmm. Of course, at a national level, I'm a Rangemaster certified instructor, and Tom Givens is the gold standard. Tom is an incredible guy, incredible teacher. You know, of all the students that he's taught, I believe today they are 63-0-3 in gunfights. So 63 wins, zero losses, and three forfeits. And Tom has a very natural way of teaching. You know, was a cop for a long while, ran a range in Memphis in the toughest part of the states, and an incredible teacher who makes incredible instructors. And so Tom has been incredibly influential. Right now as well, Scott Jedlinski has become my red dot shifu. I transitioned to a red dot on my pistol about a year ago now. And Scott has been incredibly influential in helping me to learn those skills and in helping me to grow as a pistol shooter. Guys like Steve Fisher, Yeti on the carbine, has been incredibly influential and helpful and kind to me in person. There are others for sure, but those are the ones that stand out to me and the people who I go, look, when I need something, when I need to know what's going on, those are the first ones that I go to. There are other fantastic trainers too. I mean, I'm taking a class this summer with Cecil Birch, who is also a Rangemaster handgun instructor, but a high level black belt, has a second degree black belt under Megaton Diaz here in town, and does entangled handgun stuff that's incredible. And I love training with Cece. He's an amazing guy. So folks like that are, I haven't got to train with him on the live range, but I have learned an immense amount from a distance from Greg Ellifritz in active response training. I think if you're not subscribed to Greg's blog, you are just wrong on a level I can't even describe. Mm-hmm. He puts out 4 articles a week for free, for gracious sakes, and an incredible teacher and a great and humble guy. Finally got to meet him face to face at TACCON this year. So, you know, those are some of my go-tos. There are plenty of others, but those are the ones that just jump out.
Yeah. Well, you know, John, there are so many excellent trainers. I mean, there's a few bad trainers, and we won't even talk about them. But there are so many excellent trainers out there. And what I try to do is I discourage people from taking all their training from one person. Even myself, I said, you know, don't take all your training from me, because you're only going to get one perspective and you're only going to learn what I know. And I don't know everything. So it's been great for me to learn from, you know, 5 or 6 different trainers, because I get a different perspective.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, Tom likes to say that if you never get outside of your current cadre, then after a while it kind of becomes like a puppy mill.
Yeah.
you know, everything starts to look the same. And when instructors only take classes from the instructors they already know, then they start to become a puppy mill. Whereas I did forget one name. I have, at the end of this month, I am finally going to be on the live fire range with Masada Yub. And how do I forget Moss, right?
Yeah.
I haven't trained under Moss in live fire, but I'm taking MAC 40 at the end of this month with my XO Stephanie, who is the reason my business is thriving, and her husband Neil, my director of sales. So I think that when you get out on the range with people like that and you learn from the very best, then I think it gives you something and it teaches you things that you can take with you. And especially as an instructor, I will say, as an instructor, if you're not taking a class every year, then you're not keeping up. And
yeah.
It should be with somebody different, and it should be with somebody new. And I realize that I'm kind of on the bleeding edge of that. I'm on the are you stupid edge of that. I mean, I think I'm trying. I think if everything comes through, I'm going to get 200 hours in gun school this year. But some of that's because it's my first year full time in the business. And I asked my wife if I could go a little crazy. And she said, yeah, go for it. Just make sure you can pay me at the end of every month. We can pay the bills. But yeah, MAG 40 this month. Yeah, I think getting out there and training is for everyone. And the reason for that is that your gunfight that you're going to get in is a competition. You may get the incompetent attacker, but you might not. And I want to have as much skills as I can if that day ever comes.
Well, and you know, the way my life has run, I mean, the last 60 years of my life, I'm probably not going to get the incompetent attacker. I'm probably going to get, you know, the best thug out there. But, you know, you mentioned one name, and it was on my list here to ask you about Greg Elifritz. I read an article, you know, by him years ago. It was on his ballistics study on, you know, basically what is the best caliber, you know, as far as effectiveness and actually stopping the threat.
Alternate look at handgun stopping power?
Yeah, yeah. I was so impressed by that, but I haven't been able to ask another trainer what they thought about that. You have met him personally. You know more about Greg. How much stock do you put in that? I hope a lot, because that's what I've been teaching.
Well, I will say this. I think Greg is one of the most well-informed firearms instructors in the world today. He's an expert witness for a reason. The guy has a list of instructor certifications that's a compendium. His CV is really, really impressive. So, and a heck of a nice guy and a great teacher. He is a cop by his own, I think his own thoughts and statements, a affluent suburb in Ohio. But he's an excellent cop. He is interested in justice. Yeah, anything that Greg is writing is well-researched and is well-respected. So his alternate look at handgun stopping power is exactly what I use to hand to students. And that's why I say all the time, personally, me, I carry 9mm for a variety of reasons, but I don't care what you carry. If it's in the major calibers, carry what you like best. You want to shoot that 40 caliber, rock your socks off. You want to, you know, if in your mind 10mm is best millimeter, awesome, I'm all about it. You want to shoot that 40 by God 5, and I am all about it. 357, 44 Magnum, I don't care. You want to carry a 500 Smith. You know, you do you, boo-boo. You know, I think that what we've really finally come to understand is that shot placement is king.
Yeah.
Within the boundaries of acceptable terminal ballistics. And honestly, even outside of that, I've had a couple of students who were elderly who had very difficult times with almost any, you know, reliable center fire handgun, where I have set them up with 22 Magnum or even 22 long rifle and said, look, in your situation, this is the best we're going to get. It's not ideal, but it's what we got to do. You know?
Yeah. 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 I certainly agree. All right. Well, John, unfortunately we are out of time for today. It has absolutely been fantastic talking with you again. And it's always encouraging when other top notch instructors actually agree with me. So I like that. And you've been encouraging to me, John.
Thank you, Skip. You encourage me, man. It's great to have another high-level shooter and respected teacher on the line, because then that helps me to go, okay, talk to me about what you saw and where you think I can improve. So having somebody like you in class, first of all, was honoring to me, and I really appreciate that, Skip. And talking with with guys and gals who are on the journey alongside me is highly encouraging as well. So thank you so much for taking the time.
All right. Well, thank you, John. Before you go, tell us again about Survive the Fight Tour. Where can people go to get information about that?
You know, best place that you can go to see where we're upcoming is our Facebook page, facebook.com/activeselfprotection, has the events listed. I'm in the process of burning my website to the ground and resetting it in a whole new environment, so that's not a great place to see it. But also look on the Active Self Protection Extra YouTube channel, because that's where we will be posting some more of the fundamentals of what we do in the Survive the Fight Tour. And then we can go from there. So that's where you find the details of where we're going to be. Again, Anoka, Minnesota is next. We have, a seminar in Atlanta in July. We have Kansas is coming up in October. A couple others that we're looking at, but I'm taking some time in late July, early August, take my wife out of the country on a vacation. So we're not doing some late summer and then I'm actually training a ministry in Thailand in September who rescues kids from sex trafficking. So the Survive the Fight Tour is going to Chiang Rai, Thailand in September. So that was going to be a tough one for most people to attend.
Yeah, that's true. John, it has been fantastic having you on the show today. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Skip. You have no idea how much I appreciate it.
All right. Okay, folks, we got a two-minute break. Head on out to internet and just do a search on active self-protection, and you'll find exactly what you need to know. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Welcome to my dad's Home Defense Radio Show. You're gonna love it.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
Skip, it's time for the Armed America Report. What do you have this week?
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's your story this week, Colonel?
An armed citizen in Maryland said he would have been content to give an intruder a pass if only the troublemaker had stayed away from the bedroom. But when the suspect crashed through the bedroom door, the retired teacher said he had no choice. He fired, hitting the burglar twice. The resident had woken up around midnight to take some medicine when he heard some noises and thought an animal was scuttering around outside. However, when he heard someone walking through his house, the homeowner holed up in his bedroom but had his gun ready. The evildoer fled through the basement, was caught later by police.
Thanks, Colonel. I'm very impressed with the actions of this retired schoolteacher. It would appear that he had a good firearms instructor and that he paid attention in class, because he certainly knew exactly what to do. First, he made the statement, "I was content to give the intruder a pass." This implies that he didn't want to use deadly force and he would have let him steal his property if he'd only not threatened the homeowner with bodily harm. Maryland is not the most gun-friendly state in America, so this was wise thinking on the part of the homeowner. Second, he retreated to his bedroom. Some people prefer to pursue the intruder, to do a room-by-room search, and force a confrontation. While this action is brave, it is seldom a good idea. A firearm is a tool of last resort, and this homeowner chose to retreat and set up his defense in his bedroom. Third, he got his firearm ready for action in case the intruder breached his last line of defense. He was mentally and emotionally prepared to fire his gun, and he appeared to hold nothing back when the moment of truth arrived. Fourth, he made some really good shots. On average, it takes 3 hits to the upper chest region to stop the threat. This homeowner scored 2 hits, causing the home invader to flee. This is technically a psychological stop rather than a physical stop. Criminals can be very bold and cruel, but many tend to back down when faced with a determined homeowner who has proven he has the will to shoot and the marksmanship skills to back up his resolve. All in all, this Maryland man did great. He postured himself both legally and tactically, and when the time came to use deadly force, he did what he had to do. And because he knew the laws of his state, he faced no criminal penalties.
Thank you, Skip.
Welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Great time with John Correa from Active Self Protection. It always is. Again, you can just go on Facebook, search on Active Self Protection, or do a Google search. John Correa, that's spelled C-O-R-R-E-I-A. I think you'll find him a credible wealth of knowledge, and he's a really good guy, too. If you get a chance to train with John, I highly recommend it. All right, one of the things that John said really got me to thinking. He was talking about that study done in Texas where only 1% of Texas concealed carry permit holders actually went on to get additional training. That's a scary thing for me. So here's the part in the show where I tell you what I really think. According to the latest report by the state police, Michigan now has 634,834 active concealed carry holders as of May 7, 2018. This is an all-time record high. And I, for one, think this is fantastic because I strongly believe that all people should be capable of protecting themselves and the ones they love. There is no doubt in my mind that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. After all, those words from our Declaration of Independence were the cornerstone upon which our country was built and maintained. We have the right to life. We have the right to freedom. We have the right to try and be happy. But how can we secure those rights if we're dead? We can't. Without the right to self-protection, then the right to life is simply a string of hollow words with no meaning or purpose. But today I'd like to talk about how we actually secure those rights. What's involved? What tools and skills do we need to perpetuate our lives and our chance at happiness? I just taught a concealed carry class a few days ago. The class was 9 hours long, and at the end of the day, 27 more people were sufficiently trained, according to the state of Michigan, to carry a concealed firearm for self-defense. But here's my question. Did they really receive sufficient training to overcome a deadly threat from an armed criminal trying to kill them? I doubt it very much. I have now taught well over 10,000 people to carry concealed, and I can tell you that the one-day class people receive is just scratching the surface on what they need to learn. Most people in my classes have hardly any formal pistol training prior to coming to me. So, the best I can hope for in many cases is to teach them the basics of marksmanship, safety, and firearms. At the end of class, in my parting words of wisdom, I stress to them that this class was not designed to be an end-all in their training. that it was just a starting point, and they need to go on and get more advanced training. 99% of them will not do this. I will never see these people again. They happily check off the box that says, get training. Then they go to the county clerk's office and apply for their concealed carry permit. When it comes in the mail, they contentedly check off the second box. Finally, if they haven't done so already, they go to a gun store and buy a pistol. For most people, that is their third and final checkbox. Then the gun goes in the gun safe, where it stays until they need it. And they go on with their lives as if nothing has changed. And here's the sad truth of the matter. Nothing really has changed. They are no safer now than they were a few months ago. Why? Because they have no skill set. They have no positive muscle memory pertaining to firearms. They have no warrior mindset. They can't even draw a loaded pistol without getting tangled up in their clothing, much less put good shots into the upper chest region while under extreme duress. Why do people do this? They go through all these steps to assure their safety, and in the end, they end up no safer than they were before. Perhaps this is the reason. They were never really serious about personal safety in the first place. They want to be safe, but they don't want it to cost them anything. They refuse to take the time to earn their own safety. Instead, they settle for the illusion of safety. Why? Because an illusion is vastly cheaper and easier to attain than the real thing. It takes little effort. It takes very little money. It takes no work. It's kind of like a fire-and-forget approach to concealed carry. Why get the real thing when you'll probably never need it? That's a good question. And let's be honest here. America is a pretty safe place. Crime has been going down for about 30 years now. Here's the thing. While there's a low probability of anyone trying to murder me, this is outweighed by the huge impact that murder would cost me should I be the unfortunate victim of violent crime. Isn't this the reason we have fire alarms in our homes and why we have fire insurance? My house has never burned down, but most people would call me a fool if I didn't get insurance or have smoke detectors or have a fire extinguisher in the home. And I think that's part of the problem. People treat protection from violent crime the same way they treat protection against a fire in your home. It's easy to protect against fire. Just be careful around open flames, buy smoke alarms, get fire insurance, and have a fire extinguisher on hand. That can be done in just a few hours. Then you can check off the boxes and your family is safer. But the analogy between protecting against crime and fire end there. Because using a gun to kill another human is a lot more complicated than using a fire extinguisher against a fire. A fire extinguisher can be up and running in a few seconds with great effectiveness. Not so with a pistol. There are legal aspects to learn. There are safety rules to follow. There are moral judgments to make. And all these things have to be done under stress using split-second judgments. In short, it's a daunting task, and your 9-hour beginner class will quite simply not be enough to get you through many self-defense encounters. Earlier in the show, John Correa mentioned a study that concluded that only 1% of all Texas concealed carry permit holders went on to receive more advanced training. That fact scares me. I see the incompetence every week on the gun range as I try to prepare these newbies for deadly force encounters. Many of them have trouble just being safe, much less trying to draw a firearm while someone is trying to kill them. It's one thing for me to teach them the right way, but these aren't mere facts we're trying to ingrain. These are skill sets. A fact can be taught in a matter of seconds, but a skill set has to be earned through sheer will, determination, and repetition. And gunfighting is a series of skills to be mastered if you are to prevail in a life or death battle. Why don't people understand that? Again, it's the delusion. They arrogantly think they are better than they really are. Many people believe they will magically rise to a point beyond their training and abilities simply out of necessity. This isn't true. You will not perform better under stress. You'll perform worse. Your bullet group will get larger. Your draw will get clumsier. And that's the part where many of you will die in a puddle of blood, puke, and urine. I suppose that sounds harsh and callous, but I have to make my point here. Having a CPL in your pocket and a pistol in your holster does not make you safe any more than owning a guitar makes you a rock star. It's more complicated than that. The possession of a tool doesn't make you proficient in the use of that tool. It's the training that makes you safer. It's the training that makes you proficient. It's the 3,000 repetitions done correctly the same way every time that make you safer. And that's what training is all about. First, you have to know the correct method before you can practice it. And how can you learn? Lest someone else teach you. This year, I encourage you to become part of that 1% of CPL holders who gets that extra day of training, and then practice what you've learned to develop and maintain that proficiency. And that's what I really think. All right, folks, go on out and get some more training. I want you to take it with me, but if you don't, take it with somebody else. The important thing is that you get the training, you analyze it, keep the good, throw out the bad, but at least do it. If you don't get that extra training, you're not going to be ready at the moment of truth when that guy jumps up from behind the bush with a knife or a gun or a ball bat and wants to kill you. Do what you got to do. Do the right thing. I know that you have the right to keep and bear arms, and you shouldn't have to train to get that right. I agree with that. The problem is, freedom is not going to protect you against the madman with a gun or a madman with a knife. It's your training that will protect you. So while we have the right, you also, in order to be safe, you need the proficiency and the training. In order to be safe, you need proficiency, and proficiency comes through training and proper practice. Okay, well, we are closing in on the final minutes of our show this week. A few reminders. We have the Second Amendment March coming up on June 20th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We've confirmed that Brian Calley will be there, the Lieutenant Governor, and also Mr. Colbert will be there. He's the one running against Brian Calley for governor. Show up there and find out what these people think about the Second Amendment. And of course, you can meet yours truly. Go to John Correa at Active Self Protection. Go on Facebook, search on Active Self Protection. Go to YouTube.com, check him out there. I highly recommend you study John Correa's videos on active self-protection. Also, check out our sponsors, LeapFirearms.us with Larry Jackson. Get that firearm that your family needs. And to go to FirearmsLegal.com/MidwestTactical and get protected from the criminal justice system. You got an extra 2 minutes this week, go to Amazon.com and order Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. It's important training that you will need to protect yourself and the ones you love. Well, okay, it's time for me to go mushroom hunting. It's raining outside, but I'm going to do it anyways. Okay, folks, that about wraps it up for this week's episode of the Home Defense Show. Until next week, remember, your purpose in life is to find something greater than yourself and serve it. Always remember, God, family, country, in that order. It's important how you live, and it's equally important how you die. Your family and the ones you love need your protection, so train, always train, stay alert, stay alive. Until next week on the Home Defense Show, this is your host, Skip Coriel. God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless America.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Home Defense Show. Now, get out there and protect the ones you love. We'll see you next week with more of the best in home defense.
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!